Justin, it is that time of the year where, let me just get this guy open.
Oh, I thought you were doing like one of those like dog training clickers.
I have a dog training clicker right here.
Yeah. That's what I thought you were actually, just doing that. And I was going to be classically. I got two of them.
They came in a two pack.
Oh, okay. I was like, well, what's happening?
It's that time of the year where when I leave the house in the morning, it is 40 degrees. You need a coat. And then by the time I come home, it's like, why the fuck did you have a coat?
That's true. Yeah.
It's 70 degrees right now, you know? And I never know what to do about that because I feel I'm not dressed for any of them I'm not dressed properly at any moment of the day.
I love layers. This is the layer season. Mm-hmm. Like I just wear layers and then I derobe as necessary and you just carry them with you, throw them in the car, whatever. I got vests. I got whatever. I got everything. I love it.
You just hit on the thing that I wanted to bring up. You look so good in a puffy vest.
They're so nice.
I wish I could pull it off.
It doesn't work for
you? I don't think I could.
You're probably just,
I don't think so.
You're probably just used to me. One of my students said that's my NPC character look, is me in a vest, like one of those vests.
Yeah, it's just like if I imagine you just like default.
Yeah, my default character model has that.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Or it's like your cartoon character, you know how they always wear the same outfit.
Yeah, that's my cartoon. Like, I have the vest.
Dude, okay, speaking of this, this is completely removed from what we were just talking about. Did you see the trailer for this? Like live action Powderpuff Girls show for CW.
Is it coming back?
Scrapped it.
Yeah.
But the trailer went up. Like someone found the trailer or something like that. And it's directed and written by Diablo Cody. Do you know her? She made Juno and like Jennifer's Body, among other things.
Okay. Yeah.
She's like a very, very talented writer, screenwriter and like director. And like everyone like is like looking at this trailer being like, oh my gosh, I can't believe how bad it is. And I'm like, do you guys not get that? Like that is like it's doing something with that. You know what I mean? Like I think that like it's clear that they knew they weren't going to have a budget to do something good. So they were like, well, what if we just kind of made this thing a farce?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, go ahead.
I also think part of it is that like, yes, it's the trailer, but I wonder how like deep they went into it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. To me, just like watching something like that, like sometimes I just like can't deal with people like not getting the joke.
Yeah.
When I think it's like really obvious, I'm like, no, like that's like it's doing that, you know.
It's also like it was canceled, and I don't think it was canceled because it was going to be like a great piece of television. You know what I mean? Like it's like what
exactly? like. I don't know, like one, who knows, but two, you're probably like you very well might be right that it just wasn't very good, and that's fine. But like this trailer makes it seem like it gets it.
Yeah. I also like, but, what a cast though. Like to be frank, like it would
Donald Faison, it's amazing. That's all I recognized.
Well, I know Chloe Bennett from what is the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Did you watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
I didn't. I will also say this. I up until right now thought it was called the Powderpuff Girls. But now I see it as the Powerpuff Girls.
Yeah. Did you watch the series when you were a child?
Not really. Not really. Okay. Who did you say was
Chloe Bennett, and then Dove Cameron from fame from The Descendants is Bubbles.
Okay, cast. Donald Faison as the professor.
Which, I mean, come on. Like, out of all the casting choices, there's this scene from Powerpuff Girls that there's basically like this like crazy madman who has like taken the professor hostage and has like a gun to his head. And like, he doesn't want, like, if the Powerpuff Girls do anything, he's going to shoot the professor, and he's about to. And he's like, all you have to do is finish your dinner. And there's a scene where he has just the pea left on his plate, and he just takes like forever to eat the pea. And like, when I was younger, we'd always used to, my sisters and I would always make fun of that scene. And whenever we'd eat dinner, we'd like leave one pea on the plate and then try to chew it's that cute. Last pea for as long as possible.
Do you know my history with Donald Faison?
No, you know him? Are you friends?
I'm certain BFFs? I've talked about this on the podcast. So he was a guest at C2E2 several years ago. Have I talked about this?
Say it again.
Me and Kevin were like, yo, we should go see if we can't get a picture with Donald Faison. And so we walked, like, he didn't have a line. He was just sitting at a table by himself. And I was like, yeah, like, I fucked with Scrubs. Like, I like you, Donnie, if I may. And so we started walking down the line, and his agent, or like his like handler or whatever, kind of met us in the middle of the line as we were walking down it. And she was like, are you here to see Mr. Faison? And we were like, absolutely. We can't wait to tell him how much his work means to us. And she was like, okay, so, she was like, it's like, I don't know. Like, it was like way too much. It was like $70 cash to meet him. And we were like, oh no, no, we just wanted to say thank you for, you know, Shameless or Clueless. And she was like, no, you have to pay. And so we were like, okay, we're not going to do that. Yeah. And so he just turned around and walked out. But he for sure saw us. Do you know what I mean? Donald Faison saw us. And then when she got back, he probably was like, so what was that about? And she was like, yeah, they didn't want to pay. And so now Donald Faison thinks me and Kevin are broke. And we are. But like, I don't like that he thinks that, and that's all he knows about me.
But like, at the same time, you would assume that this happens a lot at those events when people don't quite understand.
Yeah, I'll also say this, Donald Faison, I like you, but you didn't have a fucking line. You didn't want to come see two fans who are like all about you. Hey, you were great in Scrubs. You were great in Clueless, and
it was at that moment that you realized Faison. That you realized there was no line for a reason.
He was in Remember the Titans. Who was he in Remember the Titans? Petey Jones.
Oh, you know, Petey Jones.
Petey Jones.
I have to,
Uptown Girls.
I haven't seen Remember the Titans since like sixth grade. We watched it in school. It was like a big deal. We all the classes got into one classroom and we all watched it at the same time. It was a moment.
It's a great flick.
It's a great
flick. Young Ryan Gosling. Younger Denzel.
Yeah, yeah. None of them seem to have aged, like in my brain, you know, like when I'm thinking back on it.
100%. 100%. Hayden Panettiere is in Remember the Titans at Tin Box. Welcome back to Hitbox episode number 237. I had to get us out of there. Sorry, we're going to go down and Remember the Titans rabbit hole. Had to get us out. Justin, my name is Peter Hunspetek, and joining me as always is my wonderful friend and co-host Justin Makovich. Justin, you're at the end of your spring break. I understand you were a little bit sick. Are you feeling better? Are you ready to go back to school?
Am I ready to go back to school?
Grades and papers.
Oh man, my weekend was Friday. I spent my Friday night. I had the Final Four for NCAA women's college basketball on. So I had that in the background. And then I had a stack of papers. And for like 5 hours, I just kept grading those papers. Sometimes I think I do it wrong because I feel like I take a long time to grade stuff. But like, if you have like 60 essays, right? And you spend time, like this is a three-page essay. You spend time reading it and writing comments on it. Like at the bare minimum, like that takes bare minimum, probably like eight to 10 per one of those, you know?
Sure. I mean, how many did you have? You said like 60?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's long.
Yeah, that's an event. That's an event to do, you know? And you know how you get kids be better at writing? You have to give them feedback, you know what I mean? So like,
yeah, give them good feedback.
Give them good feedback and frequent feedback. So like, that's just something about this teaching thing, this activity we do that I don't think people talk enough about. Not that grading takes time, because I think most people are understanding that grading takes time. But you know what else takes time? Yeah. Planning your lessons. That takes time. Mm-hmm. You got to spend time planning your lessons. And on top of that, actually executing the lessons that you planned, that takes time. And then reviewing like your students and contacting their parents and making sure that they're where they need, that takes time. And then the grading takes time. So like all those things, they happen, but like there's not enough time in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean? Understand. I think that it seems like a really difficult part about being a teacher is just like the additional work that you have to put in when you're not on the clock. Cause yeah. it's just like, I just got to sit down and grade this. And like, there's just not a system in place for me to have time for this.
And like one of the myths of like teaching is like your summers are like free. And while it is true, you have that like free time, like theoretically you should be using some of that time to like obviously refresh and recharge, but also like doing some of the bigger planning things that you have to do that you just can't do during the actual year of school. I always think of it like, yeah. you know, if you think about planning, grading, and like the teaching thing of that, you have to like, you can't give 100% to all three of those things. So you got to like have the levels. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes like my school year, I am so on the grading and the feedback stuff. That is like my number one thing. Other times,
yeah.
new planning is the number one thing you have to do. Other times it's like the actual like instruction and like being present in the classroom. And then mm-hmm. of course it always works out that no matter what you do, you always have tests due at the same time. Even if you try not to, it just happens. So,
yeah.
you know, it's fun. But other than that, my break was good. And I did want to like spread out my workload a little bit over break. But I didn't. And here we are procrastinating. So.
I hear you. Well, Justin, quick update on our hot dog counter. You are at 82. I'm at 33. Only 9 this week for me because Elena needed lunch one day. And what? I was going to eat 2 hot dogs in front of her when I could easily share. I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but I am trying to say that's what happens when you get engaged. I think, you know, if I was just the boyfriend, what? I'm going to give her one of my hot dogs? Absolutely not. But at a certain point, you got to put the girl in front of yourself. Yeah,
you got to help. And you got to help out. Share. That's why it's great. Yeah. Claire's a vegetarian. It's good and bad because like, mm-hmm. you know, if I'm ever like meal prepping or something like that, like I have like, I can make my protein and be fine or whatever. You don't have to worry about like sharing it. But at the same time, yeah. I want to share what I cook. So like whenever I like make like some sort of meat or any meat related dish, I can't share that with her. So
yeah.
it's just kind of like one of those things that it's great. I got meal prep for the week when I make tacos. The bad thing is I can't share those tacos with my wife.
Yeah. Kind of a chicken or the egg situation. Yeah. And by that, I mean just the eggs because
yeah.
Well, she's not gonna eat the chicken.
She can't eat the eggs because she also gets like migraines from them.
Oh
yeah.
I'm going to ask you questions about that off air. here's a quick preview of what's coming up in the news. The Switch 2 has been announced, and believe it or not, there's been a lot of information about it and conversation happening surrounding it that we are going to get to in a minute. Before we do, I would like to tell our listeners that they can join our Discord server. The link to that is in the description of this episode. They can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/hitboxpod by becoming a $1 podcast producer or a $3 deluxe podcast producer like Jay Nolan, GKS, and Josh Durham. This week, we're talking about AI, and I mean, is it preemptive to say just how much we hate it? You and I have not talked too much about it, but like, I have a general disdain and hate and hatred for it.
I want to add to that, like, this will be part of the conversation. I feel like it's becoming yeah. unpopular to say you hate AI nowadays.
Yeah, because people just don't care.
Right. Like, it's like...
Because it's just...
It's there. It's
it. It was super popular and trendy to say you hated it back before it was, like, quote-unquote, any good. But now that, like, it can, quote-unquote, help you write something, people are like, oh, well, it's all right. Fuck you. Fuck off. Get out of here. Get out of my face. Learn something, huh? Learn something. Learn how to write. Learn how to read. Learn how to read Moby Dick. We're gonna talk about that when we do the episode. Anyway,
yeah, I have this fear about my life that it yeah. like none of the skills that I have are actually going to help me in a zombie apocalypse.
Well, I'll tell you what's not going to fucking help you in the zombie apocalypse.
AI, right? That's what I'm saying. So, yeah. like, if like we're teaching kids that they need to start learning how to use AI, once the zombies are here, what the fuck are you gonna do with it? You know what I mean?
You're much better suited than someone who relies on AI because you have information in your brain and you've thought about things. Gosh, fuck. I'm going to get so mad at this conversation. We got to move on until we get there. If you're interested in that, $3 a month at patreon.com/hitboxpod. Or you can rate this episode in your podcast player of choice. Follow us on Twitter, @hitboxpod, that whole thing. Justin, will you join me in the Metacritic Roundup?
I will.
Metacritic Roundup.
Two games in the Metacritic roundup right now. First game is called South of Midnight. Scored a 77 on the Xbox Series X and a 76 on the PC. Uh-oh, going to OpenCritic just to see real quick how this scored for me. 78 on OpenCritic. I'll certainly take that.
I will also take that, too, because I did counterpick it, and every point...
Oh, did you? I thought Alex did.
No, every point I lose, it loses. I'm a little happier. It started off at like an 81. I'm like, fuck. And now it's like, yeah. All right, we're good. We're good.
I have seen, so basically this is a third person action adventure game, takes place in the American South, published by Xbox Game Studios, so it's on Game Pass if that's your thing. It's developed by Compulsion Games.
They did Contrast, We Happy Few were...
Oh, We Happy Few.
Yeah, We Happy Few was the last disaster they made. Contrast was like a PS4 launch title, I think.
Did you say it was a disaster?
We Happy Few? Yeah.
Yeah. Was it a disaster? Was it not good?
I don't know if it was a disaster, but it was one of those things that kind of had like, it was like sort of procedurally generated and stuff like that. Yeah. Like it, if I am remembering it correctly, it was like one of those games that like looked to be like a BioShock type of game when it was first announced. Mm-hmm. And then like it was procedurally generated and just not as like deeper in depth as like people wanted to. And it just wasn't as popular.
I thought people liked this game. I'm on its Wikipedia page. 62, 67, 64 on Metacritic.
Oh, yeah.
Jeez,
yeah.
People did not like it.
I played it a little bit. I forget like if it was one of the free games at one point or something mm-hmm. like that. But I farted around a little bit with it, and it wasn't anything special. It felt like a procedurally generated game that wasn't very fun.
Sure. Well, this seems very different than that. This is like a fairy tale, like a southern fairy tale kind of thing.
It's like deep south, like bayou type of like
Americana. Yeah. Which seems kind of cool, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. It's got this kind of interesting animation style where like the characters have that kind of stop motion. It looks very like claymation, where like the game plays smoothly, but like the animations have that kind of like... stop motion is
like,
the way I would describe
like almost
it.
Almost like jittery, but it like is the kind of style of it.
It's like the style of Miles Morales in the first Spider-Man movie with him. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, like
he's got a different like animation style than everyone else. That said, people seem to say like this thing feels like it's kind of stuck in the past by being what it is. Very reminiscent of something like Kena: Bridge of Spirits, which is the thing I saw a lot of people comparing it to, where it's just kind of like it's fine, but it feels like a game from like maybe a generation ago that kind of doesn't really get its legs fully underneath it. It's kind of like Zelda, kind of it with the exploration. It's kind of I don't know. I think Zelda seems to be the big thing that I've seen people comparing it to, but it's not a particularly like excellent one of those.
I think the strength of this game has to do with its design, like not the
presentation,
the art. The style of it, as Giant Bomb would probably have voted for that back in the day for their style category. And then I think the kind of like the story behind it, like the narrative about talking about this like American folklore that a lot of people don't know about. One of the features of this is that there's this very extensive like lore menu about it. So when you encounter a character that's based on lore, a little bubble will pop up about like learn more about this, and then you can like read the stuff about it. And like a lot of this stuff is based on real American lore stuff that, again, me as someone who hasn't grown up in the Bayou South, I think it's kind of an interesting thing to experience and see. Also, the story is like a very like emotional story about the main.
I heard it gets a little intense in terms of its like, there's like some familial abuse stuff that happens that is a little upsetting.
Yeah. And like it starts off too, like, I believe the protagonist's house gets destroyed by like a hurricane. It kind of like continues down that route of like a not very happy game. But I do think it's kind of an interesting story all the same. And from what I hear, the story itself is interesting. It's just the combat is just generic and it's nothing special.
Kind of bland.
Yeah.
I do think this is kind of a cool thing that, I mean, you mentioned like not really knowing a lot about like, you know, the American folklore stuff. And I think that's we're such an interesting country in that we're so big that we don't have kind of like these unifying bits of like folklore, you know what I mean? Like, because there are so many cultures and things like that, because of our size and diversity, like we miss stuff, you know, cause you're like, I've never heard of any of this. You know, I know nothing about the Deep South or what, like Bayou culture or like Louisiana culture or whatever.
Have you ever been to New Orleans before?
Nope.
I cannot.
You go frequently, don't
you? Yeah, we've been three or four times.
Yeah, wow.
I highly recommend it. Like, it's such like a, it feels like you're in a different country in a certain way. It has like really huge European influences because it was like a big port town,
like, but French,
also,
right?
Yeah, a lot of French influences, but then also you do have like a lot of like this like voodoo culture on top of it and everything like that. A ton of like ghost stuff, a ton of like the hurricane memorial. What hurricane? Oh my God, it's so bad. Is
Katrina?
It Katrina? Yeah, Katrina Memorial. Yeah. And like kind of seeing that stuff. But also like even like going to like a cemetery is an interesting thing because they have like these really cool like family tombs that they have in a very like a lot of their stuff are done basically above ground. And like the tombs actually like use sun to like turn the bodies into ashes, and like they open up these tombs and like put families in there, so they're all kind of buried together. It's really interesting stuff, and it's just like such a different old, it feels old when you go there in a way that you go to like DC and like there's old stuff in DC, but it doesn't, it feels like there's like old parts around a lot of modern stuff. Louisiana feels just very like a place in time. It's kind of cool. Yeah.
That's very cool. Do you have any interest in South of Midnight?
Actually, I downloaded it and I was going to play it.
Oh, cool.
But they did that stupid thing where it's on Game Pass. And if you want to play it immediately, you have to like pay $10 to get the deluxe version of it. They do that with most of the first party games that are put on Game Pass. You can't play it day one unless you pay for it. You don't know this? Like, yeah, so basically it's the same thing happened with Starfield. Remember? Like you had,
well, that was to play it early, wasn't it?
Early, yes. So like I feel like Game Pass, it's like you're not playing it when it launches, you're playing it technically after,
I guess, like the weekend after,
you know what I mean?
Because it was available for $10.
So technically it's already released, even though you can get it early. But they do that with a lot of their stuff. Indiana Jones, it was like that. And this was one too. So I believe it comes out the 9th. It was like Wednesday of this week or something like that. Unfortunately,
the 8th.
So unfortunately, I don't think
Tuesday,
I will have time to play it this week. And I was kind of hoping that I could dive into it. It's like a 10-hour game. So I was hoping dive into it over break, but I just didn't have, I couldn't. And I didn't want to spend the $10 on it because, as we'll be talking about, video games are about to be very expensive.
And also it's like, I get to, like, gosh, that whole idea of like, you're paying for this service, but you want to pay extra to play this game right now? And it's like, no, I'm already paying too much for that. You already increased the price of this service by $10.
Right? Like at a certain point, I mean, ultimately, like I'm the kind of person that whenever I have a free to play game, I'm not going to put money into it ever. So like if one of these things happen, I'm not going to put money into it to play it early, no matter how much I want to play it. Even though I've been on record saying that I should have done that with Starfield because that weekend I was very free to just play it.
It was the weekend for it, right?
And then I moved, and then at that point I tried to, like, as I had moved, get into it, and I just couldn't sit down and like do it.
Dude, it's so weird thinking about like that game came out before you moved.
I know, isn't that nuts?
You know what I mean? Or like I was thinking about Lies of P, and I was like, oh my gosh, that game came out like right when I moved here.
Yeah.
And that game feels so far, like so long ago. I mean, but I've been here almost 2 years, you know, like.
Yeah. I can't believe it's almost been 2 years of me in this house. Right.
Yeah. Do time.
2 years.
Time flies.
2 years. 2 years.
No, one.
Two. Yeah. It'll be two in September, I think.
Yeah. Cause 2023, right?
Yeah. When did Starfield come out? 2023?
2023.
Yeah. Forever. I'm going to know when I move
Based on Starfield. Yeah. Justin, a Minecraft movie. Are you familiar with this?
Yeah. It actually.
Minecraft movie is a 47 on Metacritic. Let's see what's on Rotten Tomatoes, because I feel like Metacritic isn't the place to go
for movies.
For movies. Yeah. Yeah, 48 critic score, audience of 87. I never trust an audience score of anything. I've seen a lot of people say, like, this is an embarrassment to film, things like that. I'll say this, man. Was a Minecraft movie going to be, like, absolute cinema? I'm not saying it can't be. I'm not saying that we shouldn't expect good things out of, like, these sorts of things. But, like, from those trailers, did we think that this movie was going to be, like, an achievement for film?
No, I to be honest, when I started recently, when they had the marketing of this, like, amping up before its launch, I thought this was going to be much more of a like animated thing without human characters. I thought there'd be like a human world and they go in the Minecraft world and they turn into the blocky characters. And
100% agree.
I think that would have been a better concept than having the people in the Minecraft world, because let me tell you something.
Because, dude, all of the Minecraft characters look like fucking homunculus. They look terrible.
And the humans look like shit in this environment. Like, they're not lit correctly.
Because they're just like, yes.
It doesn't 100%. Look good. But here's the thing. It made $157 million opening weekend.
Oh, 100%. No, this is like, absolutely going to sell well. Because also, like, for me, when I see that, like, oh man, a children's movie got rated poorly, I'm not saying that that's like, oh, kids movies don't need to be good, but I am, because like, kids do care about quality. Kids like good things, you know?
Yeah.
But the thing about kids movies though, is that like, I just think they're not going to resonate with adults in the same way sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like,
well, I think the kids movies that do resonate with adults specifically are like the special ones, like, and this isn't a movie per se, but I think about Bluey, because I'm a huge Bluey fan, man. I don't have kids,
sure,
but like, the reason I like Bluey is because I think it like does such a good job of like talking to both kids and adults at the same time, and yeah. I don't believe the Minecraft movie really gives a shit about adults.
No, it's the same thing about like I think Pixar movies generally are well received by adults because they are about like more universal messages, you know what I mean, that like apply to children and do apply to adults. But like, the SpongeBob movie doesn't have that same punch. Yeah. You know what I mean, like I look at like the Minecraft movie, or excuse me, a Minecraft movie, which is its title, as like, that's not gonna have the same effect as like Soul. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to be, they have different intentions. So yes, I will not be seeing a Minecraft movie, but I'm also not a Minecraft guy. And this movie just doesn't seem like it's for me.
I mean, if it'll like pop up on like free stuff at some point, I might watch it 5 years from now when it's on YouTube TV free. You know what I mean? Like, I might like throw it up there and watch it, but like, I don't need to watch it.
With how expensive movies are to go to. If I'm going to have a night out, I'm going to go see something that I think I'm going to be interested in or have something to say about, and not just go like, I don't know what the fuck that was about.
It's so disappointing, because I think nowadays, like, I don't feel like I'm compelled to go to movies anymore. Like, it would probably be like, sure, a Star Wars movie, I'd go there, right? Day one, I need to go there for that. Marvel, it's not even that case anymore, where I need to go to a Marvel movie day one. Indiana Jones, like, what, two have come out that I haven't seen day one, like, you know what I mean? Like, but like, I really do like going to a movie theater specifically for like these more like dramatic like acting pieces, because it forces you to be put in a place where
pay attention,
you can't be distracted. But I'm not going to spend $35 watching like
A Minecraft movie,
or even like a dramatic movie and stuff like that. Like, I can't like make it worth my time sometimes, even if it is a better experience to watch it, which is just kind of sad and disappointing. But that's part of the, you know, as we'll be talking about soon, the price of life goes up, and then you have to start making your choices about what you cut.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Just before we get into that, though, you've played more Xenoblade Chronicles 3. Is it good?
Yeah.
Still good?
Yeah, I am to the point now where The story itself, like, I think I've talked about it before, it just feels much more like you're doing quests and stuff like that instead of, like, you're actually, like, building to a narrative. I think it is to the point, though, where I'm starting to like the characters a little bit more that I do like, because they do have these, like, specific affinity missions that you do that kind of highlight certain characters that you're that are in your party and stuff like that. But, like, ultimately, the end of the day, it is a little bit light on that, like, drive to move forward. And I do see that there's a little bit of a grind for me to get to the next place. I'm looking at this, like, area right now, and everything's, like, 20 levels over than me. So the only thing that I can do to get from point A to point B is to run from point A to point B and hope that they don't see me, you know? And, like, the progression was pretty good to a certain point, but now it just feels like there's such a jump that I have to go and I have to do such of all these, like, other missions before I can get further in the story. But the thing I think is really good about the game, and something that I think Xenoblade Chronicles 3 did better than the other Xenoblades that I played, is it does a good job about, like, giving you options to level up, and kind of telling you what to do and where to go. I feel like as much as I love Xenoblade Chronicles 2, it would be like, get to this area, and, like, wasn't clear how to get to that area, and unless you found the one bridge mass that got you to that area, you couldn't get to that area. But this one, it kind of does a good job leading you and guiding you and taking you where you need to go. And I don't know if that's an addition they made in the definitive version or if it was just something that was, like, akin to the original one and they just, like, updated stuff with it. But it feels like whenever I jump in there, I have something to do and work on. But, like, ultimately, when the story is not compelling, it's hard for me to want to work on and just do it because it just become, like, one of those, like, kind of mindless grinds that you have some, like, story missions that are jumbled between them.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it sounds like you're still liking it a lot.
Yeah, it's just, I think my mood to want to just play it and grind has kind of lessened, specifically now that more and more stuff is starting to come out. Like, we're going to be kind of in this crazy, like, little time here when there's a bunch of, like, newer games that are coming out that I think are pretty going to be interested. And with so many of them being on Game Pass, I will probably be trying them a lot more. That Claire Obscure game is coming out end of this month, right?
It's coming out this month. I'm really, really into this one, which also it's going to be on Game Pass.
Yeah, so it's on Game Pass too.
Which
so
is what,
like,
you're saying, but
that's exactly like I will play that. I want to play South of Midnight. I didn't write it on my doc. I dabbled a little bit in the Atomfall game. I didn't dabble enough to necessarily talk about it other than the fact that it's a game.
It seems like it's exactly one of those games.
Yeah. And there's nothing
which isn't a criticism, but it's just like that's what that is.
It's one of those things when it's like you can like kill anyone in the game that you want, and like there's three NPCs I met that I accidentally killed that I didn't want to. I just accidentally killed them because the option was like to talk or kill, and I accidentally killed them. And I was like, well, I'm not gonna actually engage too much into this and like care about restarting the game, so I'll just you know keep going forward. But yeah, like there's a lot of stuff out that I want to play and experience. And then, you know, as we'll talk about, June will also start to be a little bit crazy with things that come out.
Yeah. So Justin, I played a little bit more Assassin's Creed Shadows. I still have not unlocked Yasuke.
Okay.
How many hours? So I'm at 15 now.
Okay.
I know. I was estimating like between 10 and 15. When we talked last, it was 10, and now it is 15. That said, I have been sidetracked doing some side content. The problem, though, with the game is it sometimes struggles. I really like when a game helps you identify, like, here's the main quest, here are the important side quests, and here's just, like, busy work random shit that we put in the game. And, like, it can be difficult sometimes to discern. Like, it's clear what the main quest stuff is. But sometimes it's difficult to discern what is the difference between like the meaty side quest stuff and the just like busy work side quest stuff. So I got caught up doing some busy work stuff and then some of the meatier stuff. And then now I'm back on the grind. That said, I believe that the next thing that happens is I meet Yasuke,
okay,
based on what I've heard from people.
You're right.
So basically,
there,
like, it goes back to like the more classic Assassin's Creed thing of like the premise of the game is like a group of like 10 masked people killed your dad. Now you're going to go kill him. And it's all set on sort of like with the backdrop of the Nobunaga's invasion of Iga, this land. And like all that's happening at the same time. And so you basically just have a big quest board that's got like I said, like 15 people's faces all in a circle. And it's just like, as soon as you kill one, they just get X'd out, which is like how it used to be, you know? Yeah. And they kind of did that in Assassin's Creed Valhalla, but like, it was never particularly like clear what your motivation was other than to just like conquer England, you know? Like that game, I feel like was a little all over the place in terms of like giving you a reason to want to go fuck these guys up. Whereas this is like very clear. These are the guys you want to go kill, all that. And I've heard that you unlock Yasuke after completing the second assassination mission. And I have completed the second one, but then, like I said, just got sidetracked with side stuff. So I'm going to do that. I'm going to play as him, but it's been a minute.
Do you think you're going to finish the game?
Probably not. I mean, it's pretty long, I bet. I, like I said, really kind of clocked out of the story. It'll be something that I sort of like chunk away at while I'm sort of in between things. But like once Clair Obscur comes out, like my attention's going to be there. And then in May comes Elden Ring Nightreign. My attention's going to be there. And like, I think we're just getting to the point where like this can be on the back burner. I might play a little bit more of it, but I'm not. This is probably the best Assassin's Creed has been for me. But I wouldn't say that's a particularly the best it's been in a long time since they did the RPG stuff. But I wouldn't say that's a particularly high bar. I really liked Assassin's Creed 2 Brotherhood and 4. But I don't know if they hold up or that's just my kid brain remembering them, you know?
Yeah, I mean, my first was Black Flag and I loved it. But like going back,
it's fucking great.
Going back, it feels...
They've been saying they're going to remake it.
Don't.
But like,
we already have Skull and Bones. We have enough of that, you know.
Yeah, and that game is so good.
Best game ever. Game of the year. When did it come out? Did it come out? It did come out last year.
It came out last year.
Yeah,
woo, had to because of the Singaporean government.
Well, it had to too because it was a game of the year last year. You know.
Yeah. I have a copy of it. You know, did I talk about this?
And you still haven't played it?
Well, I tried. I have a copy of it. I got a code. They were very kind to give it to me. This was like 2 months ago, I got this code and I booted up my Xbox and then it was like, this game requires online play. Pick a Game Pass plan to purchase. Mm. And I was like, no, that's okay. Back. And then it's like, you can't play this game. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I'm not paying $10 for Skull and Bones. So
now that is shitty. Like, is it only you have to have Game Pass? Is there still any other option? You could get like the Game Pass basic, but that's still like $15, right?
Yep.
So that's dumb.
Yeah. So I was like, well, if they give me a PS5 code, I would have played some of this. Probably not a lot, but some. So it goes. I have instead, Justin, played a fuck ton of Dead Space this week.
Oh.
Because I'm doing a video about Dead Space for my YouTube channel. But I played about 2 hours of Dead Space 2, just have footage. Then I played about 3 hours of Dead Space 1. And then I'm going to have to play some of the remake for footage and play some of the Callisto Protocol for footage. But I have since gotten to chapter 10 in Dead Space 2 because I'm like, well, this is for me now. now this one's for me.
This is the fun.
Yeah, this is fun. That game has fucking gas. That game is like... that is like... all killer, no filler. Dead Space 2 specifically is such a good game that I don't understand why it is not remembered in the same way that Uncharted is remembered and all these other like first party, like third person action adventure games, because that game is so good and filled with all of the set pieces and stuff that those games had. And even you remember in The Last of Us 1 and 2, because they do it again in the second one, where you get hung upside down, and you have to like shoot zombies as they're coming at you.
Yeah.
Dead Space 2 did that first.
Hey! Guys,
Dead Space 2 did that. 2 years before The Last of Us came out. Remember when they made a really big deal about God of War being a one-take shot? And then the second that you play the game, you pause the game and you realize, like, nope, it's not. It cuts. Every single time you want to swap out any of these million fucking little upgrades you get, there are cuts in that game. Dead Space 2, it's a one shot, and every single thing is diegetic. All the menus and stuff, you just see on screen in the same way that the characters see it. It's sick.
Now, do you think that part of this is that it just came out like at the wrong time?
Or... No, I think it's just that it's been 14 years since Dead Space 2 came out.
But even on top of that, like Last of Us has been 12 years since that came out. Like, but that's still remembered fondly. Like, it just feels like with an EA game like Dead Space 2 specifically, it just came out and it was more advanced than people were ready for. It's like when Xbox like did their whole like digital push when they were announcing the 360 and everyone's like, nah, man. Or Xbox.
Yes, it was like way ahead of it.
Yeah. Was it Xbox One?
Xbox One. I think.
But it was actually way ahead of it, but people looked at it like it was the worst thing ever. Not that people view Dead Space 2 as the worst thing ever, but...
Dead Space 2 has like a 91 on Metacritic. Right. Like it is like really, really well received. Yeah, I think there's a few things. Thing one is Dead Space 3 came out, and Dead Space 3 is not a terrible game, but it is not Dead Space 2. You know what I mean? Like it's not the really, really good one. So there's that. And then also the other half of it, I think, is just that it's, you know, The Last of Us, they just kept harping on The Last of Us. And Dead Space 2, I think, is the thing that inspired the thing that got big. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, and that was the thing that really blew up. That was the thing that like inspired other things that got much bigger than it, because it was just like the momentum of these sorts of games was coming to it. I also think that horror is just going to be less wide appeal than non-horror stuff. And there's horror stuff in The Last of Us, but
it's not the same. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I do think like Dead Space 3 sucking is a huge thing too, because, you know, like,
oh, just killed all the momentum and then the series just disappeared for, you know, 10 years. And then they did the remake and then now it's just gone again forever. Which is a bummer.
Well, I mean, the Callisto Protocol, right? You know what I mean? A great game. I saw the life leave your eyes.
that's like, I don't know, like a third of the video is just, not that. It's like maybe a quarter of the video is just like, let's talk about the Callisto Protocol. This game wants to be Dead Space so bad, and it just doesn't get what Dead Space was at all, but it thinks it does, and it's embarrassing.
Doesn't that explain why Dead Space 3 sucked?
No.
I mean, that's more of like the big EA coming in and being like, this is what we want.
Correct. And because it was like, okay, the last game sold better than the first game. The third game has to sell even better. And it's like, okay, well, what do you do? Because there's only a certain amount of people who are going to be interested in survival horror. And it's like, well, just drop that. Just make it an action game. And people are like, what, isn't that, aren't these games supposed to be survival horror? And they're like, fuck you. Like, you're fired. Get out of here. And then they also like packed it with microtransactions and it's co-op and all that stuff. You don't have to play a co-op, but like, it's co-op.
Do you think, you know? Like, was the game filmed with like motion capture, like big CG cutscene, not CG, but like big like cutscenes and stuff like that?
It's a little bit before that started being like super popular. It does have that in it. Like I said, it's filmed. It's like a one shot film.
Yeah.
It doesn't have like the incredible facial capture that other games have, but the voice acting is great, and also it's all hand animated cutscenes and stuff like that. So like the faces look really good. You know, the scenes aren't like that long, but I don't know, it's still good, you know?
Cause I think I'm just trying to think of why that game did not pick up the way like The Last of Us did, even like Uncharted, like to a certain degree.
Yeah. Because it is Uncharted. It's just Uncharted in space with zombies. Like you're like the train, like there's like train chase sequences and like I said, you're getting dangled upside down, getting like blasted out of windows and stuff like that. And like my video starts with, it's called a halo jump, where Isaac's on the wrong side of this space station and he's got to get to his friends. And so he's basically just like, fuck it, I'm just going to launch myself at, like, and he flies with an iron. He's got an Iron Man suit. It's sick. It's so sick. It's the coolest thing in the whole world.
One of my favorite videos ever made for our podcast was you talking about that scene. And like,
oh, did you do that? Yes, we talked about it.
And you went like detail to detail. And then I put you talking about it next to an uncut shot of that happening in the game. And it like lines up perfectly timing wise with that scene.
Immaculate. Dude, that's literally, that's so funny. I forgot that I did that and that you did that. That's how my fucking video starts, by me describing it. And with the, that's so funny. But yeah, Dead Space 2, I could not recommend enough. It's also fun to put a disc in my Xbox and be like, oh my gosh, look at this Xbox 360 disc.
Totally works.
Yeah, totally works. Totally works. So, Justin, let's talk about the news.
Let's do it.
The Switch 2 is here. Justin, you and I talked about this, our immediate initial reactions on our bonus show last week. But it's been almost a week since the Switch 2 Direct. We've got new information on everything that happened. My feelings on this have developed a little bit. I think we should first just talk about the Switch 2. What has caught our eye with it? What has caught our eye with the games that came out? And then we can sort of talk about the rest of everything with it. That said, I don't think we need to stick to some sort of strict structure with this. I think we can jump around as we see fit. How does that sound? Does that work for you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's like thousands of stories to like, like what it's like, yes, a little flow chart of where we could go with this.
So I think the first thing that, I think the first thing to talk about is just like the hardware. It is a bigger Switch. The screen is like 1.7 or 1.6 inches bigger than the original Switch. I wrote an article on thegamer.com,
always
about like, what's up with the, like, it's just titled, "Hey Nintendo, why are you pretending the Switch OLED doesn't exist?" I was waiting for them to compare with the Switch OLED, but they just never did. And I think that there are a few reasons for it. The first is obviously that the base Switch is just significantly more popular than the OLED, based on when it feels like the majority of people bought the Switch and all of that. And then also I think that, there's two sort of big reasons why they wouldn't show off the comparison with the OLED. The first is that like, the screen size increase is much smaller. It's still big. It's a 0.9 inch display increase from the OLED, but that number sounds a lot less impressive than, let's see here. Let's say 1.2 or 1.7 inch increase. You know,
yeah,
what I mean?
It's like almost that double. Said,
the difference between a Switch and a Switch OLED is 0.8 inches. And so the difference between a Switch OLED and a Switch 2 is 0.9 inches. So like, it is like, I think the Switch OLED feels significantly bigger than the Switch. So the Switch 2 is going to feel significantly bigger than the OLED, you know? But there's that. And then I also think that just like the fact that the Switch 2 has an LCD screen as opposed to an OLED screen means that people are going to see that and be like, oh, it's a downgrade. When in actuality, it's not a downgrade necessarily, more of just like a different, like, it's an LCD that has HDR support, which I think is on par with an OLED. OLED has its own drawbacks, you know what I mean? In terms of like battery life and things like that. Like
as a quick comparison, I think my PlayStation Portal, which is not an OLED, I think that looks just as good, if not better, than the OLED Switch.
Yeah.
You know, 100%. It's indistinguishable to me being an idiot with that kind of stuff. But like, I mean, if the screen looks anything like the Portal, which I think it kind of is going to. I think that's a fantastic screen and I don't need to like nitpick about it not being an OLED.
And the Switch 2 has 120 hertz refresh rate. I think even 160 goes up to, which is really, really impressive, which means like it just gets that bump in terms of like frame rate stuff and like fluidity and stuff like that. Like the specs of this thing, I think, are pretty impressive. Also, it runs Elden Ring. It runs Cyberpunk. But I think this thing is going to be able to run just about anything.
You didn't mention Split Fiction.
Not at max settings.
Yeah, you didn't mention Split
Fiction.
Split Fiction
looks like dog shit. It's not max settings, but I'm honestly not that, like, it's a Switch, man. You know what I mean? Like in the same, and I know people are saying, like, oh, that's cope. Yo, you're like, that's such cope. I feel the same exact way about a Steam Deck.
Yeah.
Like, okay, it's not going to be able to run Control with all the reflections and everything turned up, but you're playing, you have a portable PlayStation 4. I think that's kind of sick. And to my understanding, the Switch 2 is a little bit more powerful than a PlayStation 4. You know what I mean? So like, hey, I think this is a substantial step up from the original in terms of like screen size, the power behind it, all that kind of stuff.
And on top of
the fact that it's HDR means it's going to look even better. Go on.
On top of that too, like Tears of the Kingdom looks drastically better on the Switch 2 than it does on the Switch. And like, if it can make something that I don't think I ever looked at Tears of the Kingdom and said, I wish this game looked better, to have a striking difference between the two with how like the background is rendered and how it looks, I think that just shows you that it's clearly an upgrade. You know what I mean?
I mean, that's the thing. There's the Switch 2 versions of these games, right? And they look awesome, right? And it offers like, there's like a performance mode and a quality mode, and like the quality mode is like 60 frames a second at 1080p, and then performance mode is 120 frames per second. Or wait, quality mode is 4K, performance mode is 1080, but it's 60 versus 120 frames a second. I'm gonna play, if all these games run perfectly at 60, I'm gonna play them all at 60 and have it 4K. That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, so they showed off a handful of games that were that have the Switch 2 like bump to them. It's like Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom, Mario Party, Jamboree, Mario Odyssey, Kirby and the Forgotten Lands, and then Pokemon Legends ZA. Oh, and Metroid. But I think that's cool for people who want to upgrade. I mean, like, those are all games I've played and just don't really have any interest in returning to, just because I put tens of even hundreds of hours into some of those games. You know what I mean? Like, it looks good. I'm excited. Like, I think I'm happy for anyone who hasn't played those, but like for me, I'm ready for whatever comes next. You know what I mean?
Do you have the expansion pass for Switch Online or no?
Mm-hmm.
You do. So some of those are free, I think, with the expansion pass. Like, I think Zelda is on there. Let me double check.
No. Well, there are certain games will have better performance. So like Echoes of Wisdom and Link's Awakening will have bumps to their performance that are free. But then Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, you have to pay to upgrade.
Got it.
I understand that it's like, hey, here are our big hitter games, you know what I mean? But I am also a little bit like, okay, your big hitter games are all Tears of the King, Breath of the Wild is from 2017, guys. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
I know people love that game. I like that game fine enough, but like, I need more to be really sold on this sort of system.
Mm.
One of the cool things though is, so the Joy-Cons are magnetic, and then when you take them off, you can use them as a mouse, like a computer mouse, which looks kind of cool. That looks like it's going to be pretty interesting, with stuff like first-person shooters. Like they showed sort of Metroid Prime 4 looked kind of interesting using that, but I really wonder how well that'll work. What do you think?
Going back just a second, this is on Nintendo. Nintendo Switch Online Plus expansion pack members playing on Nintendo Switch 2 will also gain access to upgrade packs for both Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild and Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, allowing you to enjoy the Nintendo Switch 2 editions of these at no additional cost.
Oh.
Which...
So then why... Oh, I guess just if you don't have it.
And I think it makes sense, okay, too, because for me, it's not like they're adding that much more content. I mean, they have the app.
No.
Like
there's a phone app
that like helps you like find stuff, which is kind of cool. But I think like in terms of like for me, like that's a great way for me to jump back into those games, just experiment with the new hardware a little bit and see what it looks like, which I think is a nice thing to do with those two games specifically, plus the ambiguous price of what that's going to be.
Yeah, knowing that then, yeah, okay. I would tool around in it.
Yeah.
I'd jump in and be like, oh, cool, this runs really well. But yeah, I'm trying to think what else, like, hardware wise. Oh, they showed off that they have the C button on the controller. That's for like a Discord serve, like a Discord chat that I'm literally never going to use ever in my entire life. They got a little camera on there for online play and stuff. Mm. You have to buy the camera separately. It's like $50.
I did hear, and again, I don't know what this, with how it's going to translate with these other cameras. You can plug in other US cameras into it as well. It doesn't have to be the proprietary one.
Yes, I did. I did see that, which is appreciated, I suppose. I'll never use this, I think, ever in my life.
No, absolutely not. I mean, it's there. I
think it's cool that exists for people, but I no thanks.
Now, no thanks.
I just never do that. What's that?
Here's an interesting use case for that. Now, I don't know what it's going to be like on Mario Kart, if that's going to allow you to play like split screen or not. But say you're playing with someone, like a child, like, or your kid, and they have
100%
their Switch, and the parent has their Switch, and then you can literally like see where the other person is. Like, that's a kind of cool thing that
screen,
you can do.
Yeah.
If you're ever doing something like that. But
I mean, I'll say this. I don't think it's a bad integration stuff. Right. I think all that is really cool. And 100%. I know that on the Next Lander podcast, they were talking about, like, oh, I've got, you know, my nephews who, like, we can play Mario Party together and I can see them and we can talk and whatever. That's awesome. I think that's amazing. And I think it's a cool thing that they put into this. That said, I will never use it. Not because I think it's bad or not worth the time or whatever. It's just that I just don't play games with people that often. And if I do, I'm playing with people who I know for a fact don't want me to see their face while we're playing together. Because we're all eating chips and things, and like, you know, I'm just like slouching over on the couch playing Helldivers. Like, don't look at me.
Now, if you, if you are playing like Helldivers with your group, would you like to see their screen? Would that be helpful? I mean, Helldivers is probably not the best example for that.
No, I mean, like, no, not really.
Like, if I'm playing a squad like Fortnite, right? Like, I find that could be quite useful. To have that, even if I don't play games like this enough, but like, I think there are use case scenarios for it. And depending on how easy it is and how well it's integrated with non Switch proprietary software, like
that said, my fear though, too, is like not fear, but like, I think it's great for playing with kids to be like, where are you? You're stuck. Oh, okay. Here's what you got to do. Versus like looking at it, I'm like, this is like sub 10 frames a second. all of the displays that they're showing, which is fine. You don't need to have like it's just to glance down and see where people are. I'm like, oh, okay, sure. I get what you're doing and what's going on. But like, I don't think it would be helpful to be able to see. I don't think that thing is helpful for really anything other than like wanting to help a kid and being able to identify like, oh, you're at this part of the map.
Yeah.
Again, I don't think it's bad. It's not for me.
But we have a whole button dedicated to it, you know? How many times...
And I'm sure I'll accidentally push that.
Here's a great example. How many times do you truly use your share button on your PS5?
I mean, like, I use it to capture screenshots and things. But
to
like...
To share?
Literally never.
You know what I mean?
Like, also, you can't. You can, kind of, but, like, you can't put them on Twitter anymore.
Right, like, so, like...
Not that you would want to, but... Yeah, yeah. There was. It's a little. It's cool. It's just not something I'm ever going to use.
Yeah,
which is fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what else was on here? Like hardware wise.
One thing that came out that I love is that you can use your old Pro controller and your old Joy-Cons with the new one.
I was delighted to hear that you could do this, because this is a very not Nintendo thing to do. Mm-hmm. Although I guess you could plug like GameCube controllers into the Wii,
but
back in the day,
you could plug GameCube controllers into your Switch too. But you do have to have the extra peripheral.
Is there like a dongle or a thing?
Yeah, to do that.
Yeah, but yes, you can wirelessly pair to your Switch, which is cool. You can't connect them because the Joy-Cons are different and the connector is different, but that's cool.
Yeah, because
I appreciate that, not having to buy Everyone's got a fucking million Joy-Cons sitting around their houses. So
I'm like thinking of like day one, like if I want to play Mario Kart with, you know, my wife, like I don't have to buy two game versions of Mario Kart or another set of Joy-Cons. I could give her one of mine, or because who wants to play with a little Joy-Con? I could give her like my old Pro Controller and it would be just as good, if not better, than the actual Joy-Cons.
100%. I'm curious how those feel. I'm really like, I want to like... The knobs, the sticks seem better.
Yeah, they look like they're it's hard to tell in the image of the scene. They look like they're up a little bit more. They look like they have a little bit more girth,
size to them.
Yeah,
and a little bit of a deeper pocket for your thumb to like actually rest in, which is kind of my problem with the Switch. The fact that they are like, is it concave or they're like popping out basically.
Yeah. I can't play a shooter on that system. Like if I need to play it on the screen with the Pro Controller, or even worse, put the stand up and use the Pro Controller on my little screen as I'm doing it.
Or you could, now you can play it with mouse and keyboard or mouse, you know what I mean?
And you can do it on your pants too. They said it works on your pants.
I did see that. I think there's something interesting. I mean, you can use a mouse. I can use a mouse on my pants. I can do like
you can.
I'm doing that right now. Do I like? Does that feel good? I mean, like not really. Well, you know,
you can use it on your pants, but like I do think I wonder if the way the controller is and how the mouse function works, if it is going to be a little better to use that way than a traditional mouse would be, because
they're thin.
Yeah,
like, they're small.
They're thin, and also like with how good the Switch is at capturing motion on Joy-Cons. I wonder how accurate it's going to be to use that. I've been trying, like I was trying to like hear how people liked using that. And I heard there is some kind of like confusion sometimes because you're still needing to use buttons on the Joy-Con that you're using as a mouse in a way that kind of breaks your brain. But it does seem pretty seamless to go back and forth between holding it like a controller and then using it as a mouse. So it could be one of those things like when you get into a car, you hold it like normal. And then when you get into like a fighting thing, then you put your little mouse on there, and maybe that would be a nice way to play it.
Yeah. I think, go ahead.
At the very least, I'm excited to play around with that feature, even if I never use it. You know what I mean? Like that'll be like day one when I get the Switch 2. I'll start like fucking around with it, seeing like what actually like I can use and play and if it works better. Which is the fun thing about getting a new console, even if I never use it after that initial.
And that's the thing, as I wonder how these like hardware gimmicks, for maybe a lack of a better term, are going to stick around. Because like with the Switch, like, you know, these sorts of things are, or with a lot of the Nintendo stuff, like, okay, the motion controls or the hardware gimmick stuff, like, are used initially and then it just stops at a certain point. They will have a slate of games built around those gimmicks, and then like it just ends, which is fine. If those gimmicks aren't working particularly well, or it's just like, yeah, we got the, you know, we made some games with this, but that's it. And like, that's fine. But, do you want to talk about the price stuff? Are there any games on here that they showed off that you were like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this?
I think I'm excited about Mario Kart, and I'm excited about it because of all the stuff they haven't said about it yet. In all of like the Nintendo Treehouse Live stuff, and even when people had the live demos, they kept saying how like the open world is more than what you're seeing. And there's more stuff that happens in there that we don't know about yet. And I'm assuming on a very simple level, there'll be hidden things that you can find in the open world. But I think on a broader level, there was stuff about like foods and like places you can stop inside the actual open world that are going to be more than it just being a simple means to get to your next location. It might be a more content rich open world. And even if it wasn't, like, I still think that's a cool feature for the new Mario Kart, that different ways to play a game that can sometimes, in my opinion, get a little stale by just doing races over and over again.
Yeah, I would agree. Like the fact that it is a thing to explore, I think, is kind of cool. I wonder how that is going to affect like maybe more casual gaming fans. You know what I mean? I feel like with Mario Kart, like a lot of the appeal is that like that's a great party game. Right. To just sit down and say like, all right, you know, pick up a controller, super simple to control. We're always going to play some Mario Kart. But if it's like, hold on a second, I got to get out of this section of the open world and find, you know, where the race starts. I wonder if there's just like a grand prix option where you can just play levels. I mean,
they have to. I mean, time trials are such an integral part of Mario Kart. Like, that is like where world records are coming from. That's where people spend hours trying to get the best possible time they can get. And while they can still have that from getting to point A to point B of the open world, I think taking away that is taking away something that's at the core of Mario Kart. I mean, when I was a kid playing Mario 64 and trying to beat my sister's times on the different maps was like how I like spent so much of my time playing those games.
Yeah.
And even when I was a little bit older and a little bit better at games, I was so into like pixel perfect on a lot of like the Game Boy Advance Mario Karts. What Mario Kart was that? Seven, six, whatever it was. Like playing those courses over and over again to where I'm pretty sure I have a pretty damn competitive time on some of those Bowser's Castle levels on those games. I would assume that that would be coming back because you have to have that in a Mario Kart game. But you know what they say about assumptions. Nintendo doesn't listen.
Yeah, that's true. Speaking of, the Nintendo Switch Welcome Tour, which is a game that they were showing off, and it's like you take a little tour of the Nintendo Switch 2 hardware. You're a little guy standing on the actual, like, it's a game where you're a little guy standing on the like, Joy-Cons and screens and stuff like that, and you get to like play some games to show off like the how the hardware works basically. And everyone's like, oh, this is kind of like a more informational version of Astro's Playroom. Like, this is kind of cool. It's kind of cool that they would include this as a pack-in game. And then they ended it by being like, it is a paid downloadable title at launch. And I was like, sorry, what's that? And so now people have previewed it. And I don't remember who said it, but someone was like, this is even now that I've played it, this is even less of a game than you think it is.
Oh, it's exact. I think I know what it is. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, it's a pamphlet.
Yeah.
It's a pamphlet of just like, here's what the, you know, the the shoulder buttons do. Like, all right, I got it. They're magnets. Great. There's this tweet from Gene Park, a reporter, saying, Reggie had to convince Miyamoto and Nintendo to include Wii Sports as a free pack in the game for the Wii. According to his book, Reggie said Nintendo simply doesn't believe they should give away their hard work for free, but they relented for the Wii because it was such a new concept. And look at that. I mean, a lot of people like to say like, oh, Wii Sports was like one of the best selling games of all time. And I guess that's technically true because it was sold bundled with the Wii, but also like, everyone has played it and it has gone down as one of the most iconic games of all time in a way that I don't like. Astro's Playroom, everyone played, but I don't think it's going down in that same regard, right? This, I'm just looking at it and I'm like, it's not even going to go down as that.
I mean, yeah, even, so I guess, even like, if it was free, I don't think it would be a big deal. You know what I mean?
If this, the only way I would play this is if it was free and to go like, okay.
Has a price been released about this yet that you know of?
No. So they've been doing these Treehouse streams where they're like showing off some of these new games. And it's just like a bunch of like young millennial guys and gals being like, whoa, what's going on with Donkey Kong here? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's cute. They're doing like, it makes it sound like I'm like making fun of them or being shitty. I'm not. They're doing a great job. But all the chat, because they're streaming it live on YouTube, all of the chat is like, drop the price. Because like, I can't even think about what an amount to pay for this that I would pay for this would be.
I think anything
if this is $10,
that's crazy. You know, like,
that's too much.
I think
if this was $1, I'm insulted that you wouldn't just
give it to me.
In.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think there's a price for this that works. Would you agree?
I would say the price that would work for me is it doesn't matter, but like you include it in your Nintendo Switch expansion pack.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like something like
yes.
that, but
put
like
it, put it in the expansion pack where it's like,
it's an easy win.
Not free technically.
Easy win. Yeah. Easy win. But like, I do feel like the whole like reveal of information has been weird with this system.
It felt like they knew that people were not going to be kind of stoked about certain aspects of this, which we'll get to the price stuff probably right now. But Yeah, I agree. I feel like they kind of knew and they didn't really want to say a lot of stuff.
Because we woke up together to watch it live, right? And then we recorded
our... We slept together in a bed.
In the
like
same
Grandpa
bed
Joe
for
like
any minute now. Yeah.
Hey, Justin, are you awake?
You excited? I can't sleep.
Yeah. Go on.
But when we were done, we started talking about the direct and like what we thought of it. And literally as it was happening, they started to, outside of the direct, talk about the price of games. Jeff Keighley was the first one to tell me how much these games were going to be. Also, when the pre-order date was going to be was announced afterwards, kind of like through this kind of stuff. And a lot of these announcements that I thought would have been something that you should have put in the actual presentation, or even like a page at the end of the presentation, weren't part of the presentation for introducing this new console. And it became the direct itself then seemed to be so much less about introducing the console than just being like, all right, here's some things about the Switch 2 and the games that you can play on it, rather than it being like, this is the brand new console, this is our launch of it, this is the price of it, this is what it's going to be like. It felt like what I was expecting from that direct was not what they gave me. They just gave me like, here's some new games or games you can play on it, rather than it being like what it is.
Cause, and what a way to cuff it too. Cause it's not even like, here are some new games. It's like, so I counted. So I think they showed off 34 games and it's like 13 of them, not including like the like sizzle reel of GameCube games and stuff. And I think 13 of them are new games or are games that like do not, that aren't out right now. So like less than half of the games that they showed off are new. And like, hey, I was so stoked to see Kenitsugami, right? But like, or like, hey, Cyberpunk, Elden Ring, whatever. Like, that's all great. But it is all like, you can go play those games right now on hardware you most likely already own. I found the information rollout to make me drastically less excited about all of this. Because also like there are some things that like people are saying that is not verified. So for example, games on the Switch 2 are gonna cost $80. And some retailers in some regions of the earth have said the physical copies of those games will be $90. I have not been able to find a retailer like in the US or anything like that to say that they're $90, at least as of when I was looking this up, like 2 hours after the Switch, after the announcement, right? Wouldn't it have been just so simple to just clarify that in the thing? And then the Switch itself is $450. The Switch bundle with Mario Party or Mario Kart is $500, which means you're getting $30 off Mario Kart, but it's only while like supplies last.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, on top of that, not every game is going to be that price.
Right, they're like different priced, which is like kind of how it is right now already with the 70, 60, 50.
Right.
But most games are either $50 or $70, you know?
So like,
or if you're an indie game, it's whatever price.
Donkey Kong is going to be $69.99. Nice. Right?
Nice.
Like,
wait, it's $70?
It's 70.
Okay.
And Mario Kart is the 80, right?
Yeah.
So it feels like it's almost worse to me than it being like games are like now 80. It's just like they create a new tier that kind of just means that they can charge whatever they want for games depending on how they value it.
Yeah. Which I guess I appreciate having the option, I suppose, but do you really have an option?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's frustrating, and it's frustrating that they like, it felt like they tried to like keep this information from you until like you find out later, you know? On top of that, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to be like, and then why is a game like Mario Kart valued at 80, but a game by like Donkey Kong Bonanza, who, if I'm correct, is it made by the team who did Odyssey?
They are always so coy.
Yeah,
about this.
They don't say necessarily, but if that's the case, why is that game not valued at 82?
I don't know who's developing this.
Yeah, Nintendo. Hell,
but I don't know which one of their studios.
But like,
yes, 100% about like, how are you valuing this?
Yeah. So
how can people plan, right, to know which games are the premium games and which aren't.
And here's something that, like, I'm nervous about in a weird way, but I think there's ways around it. When I bought Xenoblade X Definitive Edition, I purchased the Nintendo Switch Online voucher to get two games for $100, right? Okay. Basically, I'd have been saving $20 instead of two $60 games, only $100. And my plan was to buy ZX or the Legends ZA on it. But now that there's a Switch 2 version, is that going to be included? Do I have to buy the Switch version and then upgrade to the Switch 2 version because that's what I'm going to have to do now? Or is that voucher just only going to be good for, like, I don't know. Like, I've planned ahead, but they fucked with the plan that I made, and there's no answers to what I should do with that. You know what I mean?
Yes, 100%. And it's just like literally, what am I supposed to do?
Yeah, like I feel like my hands are tied, and I feel nervous that I've wasted money now because the promise of getting these games for that price, I don't even know if that's true anymore.
Yeah, it's so frustrating. And on top of all of that, too, like we were talking about, like, okay, so we were talking about before we started recording, like, okay, people saying, oh my gosh, GTA 6 is going to be $100. And I think now that Nintendo is going up to 80, and that, again, it might be true that their physical games might be 90. Rockstar is like, yeah, we're $100. Easy. And so we don't know that for sure, right? It's not confirmed or anything like that, but it is one of those things. It's just like, oh, this is most likely how it's going to be. And if that's the case, like, I just don't know what I'm going to do, because then Ubisoft goes up to 80 or 90 or 100, right? And PlayStation does the same thing. Xbox Studio, Game Studios does the exact same thing, right? But just like, okay, we're all just going to charge more for this. And then at that point, I can't buy them. Like, I just won't be able to buy these games. I just won't be able to play these games. And I think that sucks, because I think a lot of people are going to be in that same predicament, right? Where it's just like, this is too expensive, and these are a luxury hobby. They're not even supposed to be a luxury item, right? But it is a thing where it's like, this is my hobby. And now it's turned into like a really expensive thing that I just won't be able to afford. And like, I wonder what sort of ramifications that's going to have on these companies, because I understand that the idea is like, well, if we just charge more, we'll be able to recoup more of our budget. But it's like, but if way less people buy these things, then are you really recouping the budget? Or now if two people buy GTA at $100, but that price means I'm not going to buy it, they've lost money because three people didn't buy it, as opposed to, you know what I mean?
And on top of that, people were tweeting afterwards that, oh, this is a big win for Game Pass. It ain't a big win for Game Pass, because what that means is Game Pass is going to start costing more.
It's going to cost more.
That's,
again,
that's how they're going to recoup it. Right. Like, that's how they're going to recoup it. So like it, like the fact that this is
bad
becoming something that is going to become more and more expensive is, I think, concerning and worrying, because this, as you said, this is a hobby. And if I start spending more on my hobby than I do on groceries, like, how can you justify this as being a hobby that I am going to be a part of? When, you know, yes. I love reading. That could be my hobby again. I was at the library.
Yeah,
you know,
all sorts of stuff.
Free. Those books are free at the library.
You I also pay think... taxes, but, you know. I have run into this problem too, when people, like, do you remember when the PS5 Pro was announced and Jeff Keighley was like running interference for PlayStation, being like, in comparison, this is actually a pretty fair price. And it's like, hey, I'm not trying to be mean, but are you a dipshit? Like, yes, with inflation, this is not astoundingly more expensive than other consoles when they were announced. However, Jeff Keighley, has my wages gone up? Have my wages gone up? No, they have not. Since 2020, my wages, I guess, because now I have a full-time job, yeah, they went up drastically. But like, since getting a full-time job, have my wages gone up? No. No, they haven't. Go ahead.
I watched a TikTok last night. There was a scene from Boy Meets World in like 1999 when Corey and Topanga were buying a house, and the realtor was like, oh, you can afford it. $80,000 is how much this house is. You can afford it, 30-year mortgage, blah, blah, blah. So then this financial guy's like, yeah, that's the, you know, talking about that, they said the mortgage rates were 7% then, just like they are now. house prices, the median house price in Philadelphia, I think where they were, was $80,000. Now the median house price is $250,000. Wages.
Like, what the fuck am I supposed to do?
Right. Wages in 1999 was like $40,000. In 2025, the average wage, $60,000. The amount of increase in wages does not equal the amount of increase in prices of goods.
Yes.
Like,
and it's just like, I don't understand how a studio is looking at this and being like, people are going to value video games so much that they're not going to have dinner. Not true.
Right.
Mega fucking not true.
And it's going to make these free to play games. It's going to make Jesus.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's the thing. All the best games right now are free anyway.
Right. Like,
that's not true, well, but you know what I mean?
Fortnite. Like, let's use Fortnite.
But like, there are, yes, that is a really high quality game that you do not have to put a cent into.
Right. And you could play it forever. Like, and there's so many different things that you can do in it. I mean, how much is Roblox? I've never played it before.
It's free to play, but there's like money in it. But in the same way that all these free to play games are. I think it's kind of a what's the word? Like,
I got to put my password in here. Choose your own.
I think it's a little predatory on kids, but
what if I be, what I, if I become
point taken.
Of Roblox influencer?
You do do it. I think you get to watch anything, dude. I will say I have seen a lot of people like trying to defend these practices, the price of games and stuff like that. And I've seen a lot of people saying like, well, if you don't like it, don't buy it. Vote with your wallet. And there's an incredible thread on r/socialistgaming. I've gotten on Reddit this year. You heard of this website called Reddit?
yeah. That's I was searching it for WanderStop discussions once I beat the game.
Unfortunately, the WanderStop Reddit is just a lot of people being like, I like this game, don't you?
I know, it's so too positive. I want more discourse.
It's wholesome, and I like that, but I also would like to have
deep analysis about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but socialist gaming is interesting because it's just a cool, like, I don't know, it's a cool place to hear people like talk about games from a left-wing perspective, which I appreciate. But this person basically says, like, vote with your wallet and other liberal arguments that need addressing. And so I'm not going to read all of this because it's kind of long. But this person says, according to liberal economics, the free market is a decentralized democratic mechanism where quantities and prices of goods produced reflect the need of a society through the interaction of the laws of supply and demand. What this means is producers set a price and consumers make a choice according to their subjective preferences, which in turn causes producers to raise or lower the price. So in the case of Nintendo, Miyamoto says games will cost $80, and it's up to consumers to determine if the price is justified by voting with their wallets. If enough people don't buy, Miyamoto will respond by lowering the price. And the price doesn't change. And if the price doesn't change, this means that the price accurately reflects how the people value Nintendo games, and also that the outcome is efficient, which means basically that no resources are wasted, and we have the ideal combination of quantity and price, where, incidentally, needs are met in the best possible way. You could go ahead and force Nintendo to sell their games cheaper via some kind of gamer law, for example, but according to liberal economics, this would ruin the whole thing and people's needs wouldn't actually be met. Instead, Nintendo would make less games because they'd have less incentive to make them, and we'd all get less as a result. Okay, so this is how it actually works. There are literally three corporations in the console market. They set the price that they think will bring them more profit between them. They don't even have to talk to each other and decide it's supposed to be legal because it's an oligopoly where price hikes are matched and price cuts are ignored. But also, of course, they each talk to each other. Now, because it's an oligopoly, it's not like there are many choices from the consumer side. If you have some money for entertainment and want to get into console gaming, you need to get a PlayStation or an Xbox or a Nintendo. Now, games will cost $70 to $80. The question is, can you afford games? If you can and you want to play new games, you are not going to be happy about prices, but you are going to pay because you don't really have a choice other than abstaining, which on an individual level doesn't do anything. If you can't afford the new prices, and I'm genuinely sorry to say, you won't get the new games and there's nothing you can do about it on an individual level. Other richer people will and you won't. For many people that can't afford that can afford it to a degree, they will just buy less games. And so basically they go on to continue saying like, vote with your wallet doesn't work because there are always going to people that are going to buy these things and these companies are going to be like, so it works because we're not, you know, we're not like... because there's still people buying these, but it just doesn't work like that when the market is controlled by three companies.
And
it's frustrating.
I mean, the oligopoly.
Oligopoly. That's a fun word. It's tough to say.
But that's a fun word. I mean, because that's going off the idea that, like, the U.S. is technically an oligarchy in which there's, like, a few people with a lot of money that control a lot of stuff that we do, right? Like, you can vote with your wallet, but at a certain point, like, everything goes up. And, like, I you know what? Gas is too expensive. I'm not going to buy gas anymore. Like, I can't say that.
Right. That's the thing. It's people will be like, well, take the bus. And it's like, fuck you.
Yeah.
you obviously know that you're being an asshole.
Right.
And that's not a possible thing with the way that our world is set up.
Right.
You know that that's not possible. So why are you pretending like I'm the bad guy in this situation? That I caused this problem? I don't. I just live here.
Right.
Yeah.
It gets better though, right? Irritating. Everything gets better with.
No, it won't.
No. Oh, okay. Cool.
It's just very stressful to think about, like, what do we do about this? Because then also, you want to, here, let's make this a little bit better.
Yeah.
Switch 2 pre-orders were supposed to go live, I think, this week, where you had to, like, apply. I think this is kind of a good way for Nintendo to, like, and for other companies to kind of, like, push back on scalpers. Where they have, like, limited quantities or they're, like, probably going to sell out. This is a tweet from GameStop. An update from Nintendo. Pre-orders for Nintendo Switch 2 in the U.S. will not start April 9th, 2025, in order to assess the potential impacts of tariffs and evolving market conditions. Nintendo will update timing at a later date. The launch date of June 5th, 2025 is unchanged. GameStop will continue to work closely with Nintendo and provide updates as soon as more information becomes available. Stay tuned for the further details. So they're basically saying in this, like, hey, this price of this is probably going to go up because of what did Donald Trump call it? Freedom Day? Freedom Day is when he announced all these tariffs.
He's an idiot.
It's just like, hey, we lost $3 trillion in our stock market in, like, an afternoon. I don't know anything about stocks, but I do know that seems bad. But he's a really good businessman, I'm told.
By who?
I think
him?
That's bad, though. That's what they're saying. That he's really good at business and he's really good at bartering with people. Have you seen there's, like, a little comic of a guy who pisses his pants on a dance floor and everyone's like, oh my gosh, what the fuck? And he's, like, standing there. He's like, rent free. that's our president. So it's probably going to be more expensive than that. So that's pretty cool too. What's the most you would pay for a Switch 2?
I think the word 700 is scary.
Whoa, really? Because I know we love to say, like, we're broken human beings about, like, well, I'm gonna buy it, right? To me, the max I can pay for a Switch and a game is $500. So, like, the Mario Kart bundle, that is the top of what I can pay.
Yeah.
And that's just where I'm at. Also, it's my job, you know what I mean? But what are you saying?
I think anything over, like, if I have to spend, like, over $600, I probably would to a point, but, like, it would be more of a maybe not day one type of situation. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And, like, anything over 700, it would be like, no.
Anything over 700?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's,
you know,
that's
like, to me, that's like an absolute no. Because at this point, like, two of the games I want to play this year would be Metroid Prime and Legend ZA. Those things are going to be on the Switch still. I don't need to rush into getting that. To be honest, play my Switch significantly less than I used to because of my PlayStation Portal. So as long as I have that stuff hanging around, I don't think I'm going to necessarily be missing out on not having a Switch in the same way. Will I miss playing Mario Kart? Yes. Will I miss playing Donkey Kong? Actually, yes. Will I miss playing anything else that's going to come out? Probably. But, like, at a certain point, I can't create, like, money where I don't have it. You know what I mean? Like, and it becomes much more of a luxury rather than something that, like, I've been like, anticipating buying this year, it is now something I'm anticipating buying on top of that. Like, great example. Yesterday, I had to buy tires.
Mm-hmm.
Two tires. They're like over $400 for those.
That's rough.
You know what I mean? Like,
I do. That's real rough.
Probably could have gotten a little bit cheaper ones, but like when it's like the $69 tires or the $110 tires, like I'm not, it's like that. Like, I don't know.
Yes.
I don't want to buy the cheap ones, even though it's a nice price.
Yeah.
But like that same thing happens. Like when you're thinking about purchasing stuff, I could have paid the more expensive money for the tire, but at a certain point, I'm not going to spend more than that on tires. Cause there's like a limit to how much I will pay for something like that. So I don't know. Like I'll be interested to see if the price does go up significantly, if it does go up. And that will be so frustrating considering right now pre-orders have only stopped in the US, correct?
Yes.
So
and like that's the other thing too, is like this is a US problem. You know what I mean? Like this is, well, I mean, not it's a global issue, right? And like the price of this in general is a global issue, but like with the tariff stuff, this is a United States only problem. And something that I think is extraordinarily frustrating is this, I think, is going to be one of the things that helps a lot of people understand why the current administration is doing a really bad job. And I think, in my opinion, hey guys, it's been really fucking obvious that this was one, going to happen, and two, that they've been doing a bad job, and three, they were going to do a bad job from the start. But it's really frustrating. The frustrating thing is like I'm glad it fucking took, you guys are waking up to this, but I'm really fucking irritated that it's about video games, that's what sort of turned people on to this.
Here's the thing. Yeah, it's about video games, but this is like a very obvious example of this impacting us in our world. I'm not sitting here like, I guess I don't know how much milk is because I need to buy milk every week, so I just put in my cart. But like, it's going to impact
everything
in the same way. Like we're seeing, we're going to see a direct impact on this. But like, I was my brother-in-law like sells cars, and he was like, we had like breakfast the other day, and he very casually asked like, "Are you guys going to be looking for a car soon? Because I'd buy it now."
Yeah,
because that industry is going to be affected by these tariffs significantly. But it's not just that. It's literally everything is going to be affected by this, to a point where it's going to make the cost of living even more expensive. And as this console goes up again, I don't buy eggs every week anymore because I don't want to have to spend $8 on a dozen eggs. Why would I then treat a video game system differently than something like food?
In the least like panicked, dooming way possible, I literally don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what to do. like it's the sort of thing where like, yes, there's ways to plan around this sort of thing a little bit in terms of like, hey, identifying like, hey, what are the things I'm spending money on that I guess aren't essential? But the problem is I kind of already did that. and I've done that to a pretty intense degree because of how much I'm saving for this wedding, you know? So I'm kind of like, okay, what else can I cut? And it's like, we're already
there, man.
Like I'm eating soup every single day. Well, I'm actually on that hot dog diet, but
it's a good diet.
Like, but I mean, the hot dog diet is also like pretty cheap. You know, when you like break down like how much what my lunch costs me every day, sub $5, you know, it's like two or four maybe, you know, it's like, it's pretty cheap, for where we're at. You know what I mean? I just don't know what to do. I'm going to figure it out. I'll tell you this. What I do know what I'm going to do in that, like, if the Switch is $600, I'm not going to buy it, you know? And the only reason I'm even considering it is because, first of all, I got a tax return, which is unfucking real for someone who works a job like I work.
Congrats.
Thank you very much. But also, my other excuse is like, well, it is kind of my job. I mean, not kind of, it is my job.
Yeah.
Is it impossible to do my job without this? No, I certainly could, but it is worth it for me to be informed, as informed as possible, but also I can't break the bank to get this thing that is semi-necessary, you know?
And let's take a step back. I think $450 is a reasonable price for this.
I do too. I saw a lot of people really upset about this. In terms of a modern day console, I think this is completely reasonable.
Right. Like, and yeah, the Switch when it launched was what, $300?
$300, yes.
But like, this is that, like, even a step further to being a portable console, because it does have the dock that has the 4K capabilities in it that significantly yes. enhances the way that the system works. It's running back. There's a lot in here.
Unlike the PS4 to PS5 jump, you know, that sort of Xbox One to Xbox Series X jump, this is a significant increase in what this console is.
Yes, yes.
It is expensive, don't get me wrong, but I do not see that number and go like, oh, this is preposterous.
Right, you know what right, I mean? Like, right. But that
is not the problem for me.
Then you start hitting, like, when does it start to become like something like, ooh. And that's where I sort of think, like, 500, I thought in the back of yep. my brain, like, that might be a possibility, but that would seem a lot to me, you know?
Yes, 100%.
And then if it is 500 with the tariffs, maybe I can understand that because this is the reality of the thing. But then we start pushing that higher and higher. Like, where does it end?
But then also 500 with the tariff. If this console is $500 alone, okay, now I have to pay $80. This is $600. You know, like what the fuck?
Yeah.
I guess, like, what the fuck? I'm going to replay Dead Space 2. Like, that's what I'm doing. You know what I mean? I'm like, hey, guys, I've got a great game recommendation. It's called Dead Space 2. It's really good. It's like Uncharted, but in space. And it's like 10 hours. It's great.
I might
go play that game.
I might actually play Starfield this year.
I wrote a piece about, like, if the price hikes are happen, I'm going to get through my backlog. I'll play Red Dead Redemption 2.
Oh, dude.
I'll play Fire Emblem Three Houses.
Oh, man, I really hope this is expensive, man. Just for your sake.
I know, like, that's the thing. It's you know, if it ends up being way more expensive, like, it's actually a good thing.
I'm just thinking of
how expensive
this year is going to be. Because uh-huh. even if things were $70, the games uh-huh. that I want to buy this year between, uh-huh. there's too many. Like, I can't play them all anyway. Thank God.
I'm going to have to pick and choose.
Thank God. Like, and I say this because I still pay the money for it, but thank God there's Game Pass, because at least that's the illusion that I'm not necessarily putting that money to the games directly in that way. I've kind of, like, invested in these games over the year.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. I'm trying to think about, like, a thing how to end hopefully. Oh, here's something. This is not a particularly big news story, but, according to a tweet from Nobel, I like this guy on Twitter. According to two Apex Legends leakers, Titanfall 3 is in development and will launch in 2026. If that's the truth, then I will be very happy about that. But I've been burned before.
Titanfall 2?
Titanfall 3.
Oh, okay, okay, okay. I was like, whoa.
That's true.
Peter,
that's
I got true. Some good I'm news for you. Titanfall 2, you can play it right now.
Hey, that's another game that's fucking awesome and exists, and you can play it right now. So, all right, y'all, I think it's going to call it for us. Be safe out there. You know, you're going to be fine. It's bad right now. We're going to get through it. We're going to get through it. And we just have to be there for each other. I got two eggs if anyone needs them. I was planning on using them, but if someone needs eggs, I've got two.
I had to throw two away because they went bad on the 31st, and I did not eat them in time.
Should have just cracked them right in the mouth. We'll catch you next week. You can join our Discord server. Link to that is in the description. You can also support us on Patreon, patreon.com/hitboxpod, by becoming a $1 podcast producer or a $3 deluxe podcast producer like Jane Old, GKS, and Josh Durham. If you can't support us there, that's fine. Twitter @hitboxpod, rate this episode, podcast player choice, all that shit. Always remember, old games are old. Bye.
Bye. I'll stop recording.